This ad is made from 100% recycled commercials. Just like Smartwater's
all new
bottles are made from
100% recycled
plastic.
What's that number again?
100%. Every Smartwater bottle is made using recycled plastic. And because it's still
100%
recyclable, the plastic will be used again.
And again.
Smartwater. Now in a 100% recycled plastic bottle. Label and cap 100% recyclable but not made from recycled plastic. Yet. We're working on it.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12, and your weekly opportunity to illuminate the darkest crevices of your cranium. These are the opportunities to get the questions to which you need an answer up on the board. I will, however, be keeping a very close eye upon the coronavirus story and specifically the speech that Matthew Hancock is still giving to the British Chambers of Commerce. I'm hearing that he is reluctant to close universities at the moment, but contemplating the possibility of following Italy's lead on the closure of schools. He tells us that Chris Whitty, as you heard in the bulletin, the chief medical officer, tells us that containing the virus looks as if it's going quite well at the moment. So more on that story as and when it develops. But, well, it's ridiculous. It shows the appetite for a slight change of pace, because I haven't given out the phone number yet and my switchboard is already full of people who clearly been watching the clock and waiting for Mystery Hour to begin. I thought that was just my colleague Keith that did that. So should we just crack on then? Or shall I explain how it works? Crack on and you can work it out for yourself if you're new to the programme. Okay, Dean's in Potter's Bar. Dean, question or answer?
It's a question, mate. Pleasure to speak to you, James.
Likewise, Dean.
I just wondered, we all speak different languages around the world, but yet we all laugh the same. Like, is it just bred into us, or... I don't understand how we all, no matter what, everyone seems to laugh the same around the world.
I can't, you know what happens at times like this, Dean. I can't decide whether a question is brilliant or incredibly bad.
I hope it's one of the brilliant ones.
But are there any cultures where laughter is, or high levels of amusement are denoted with something other than laughter? It must just be a reflex. Isn't this a bit like saying, why do we all breathe? Why don't we all breathe in different languages? I don't know. I can see where it's popped up in your brain and you've thought, oh, that's a bit weird. I'm going to ask about that on Mystery Hour. But equally, I can't quite conceive of an answer that is going to delight us. But I will ask. I mean, are we aware of any other cultures where laughter is not... Because usually it's
personally.
No, I'm not either. Usually it's the nodding your head and shaking your head, and there's a couple of countries or a couple of cultures where it's the other way round.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before, yeah.
But that's not the same, because that is learned behaviour, isn't it? Is laughter learned behaviour? It's not, is it? Because babies laugh.
Yeah.
There's your answer, mate. Yeah. Babies laugh before they've even got language.
So it's just something that we just naturally do.
Yeah, it must be. And my proof of it is babies.
Okay.
I'm going to take a round of applause for that one, I think.
Oh, brilliant.
Early doors. Thank you, Dean. So because laughter is in place before language, there is clearly no case for arguing that laughter is linked to language. There you go. PhD. Anthony, Boreham Wood. Question or answer?
Question, please, James. Good morning.
Hello, Anthony. What can I do for you?
So, I am teaching my 4-year-old to swim at the minute.
Really? Well, shouldn't you be concentrating more?
Well, you know, I'm multitasking.
Well, carry on. Well, you've got her in one hand and the phone in the other. This is ridiculous. What if your trunks fall down? Carry on.
So she swims through under the water really easily, but struggles to swim normally. But is there something? How do we learn to float? Like, what's the how? Who? How? I've been thinking about it for a while.
You have, but now that you've said the words out loud, it's not sounding quite as crucial a conundrum as it did when it was confined to the contents of your own head, is it?
You did this to me last time, James, and it's a bit, you know...
I'm not doing anything to you. But you're saying, how do we learn to float?
Yeah.
Practice.
No. There's got to be something, surely, because it's not like walking or crawling.
It is a bit. It's just like that, except in water. Isn't it?
No. I'm not taking that. All right. I'm not having that, James.
All right. I'm not going to get into an argy bargy with you about. So how do we learn to float?
Yes, please, sir.
All right, I'll see what I can do. All right. Now get back
Thank
in that pool
much.
Quickly. To 8 minutes after 12 is the time. Rob's in Sunbury. Rob, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Rob.
Why is garlic in every single cuisine you can possibly think of?
It's not in English cuisine.
It's not in English, but it is in Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Italian, French.
Because it's so delicious and it's so easy to grow, I think, is the short answer.
Was it taken there by...
Well, hang on, you can only ask... Well, I mean, to be fair, Rob, this is three calls in a row where you're evolving, you're finessing your question while we're live on air. So,
well, for, first-time caller,
no, I know, that's absolutely fine. But let us clarify, we're not claiming that garlic is in every cuisine because it's not in traditional patriotic English food.
Okay. No, that's true. But okay.
But the rest of it. So why is garlic such a commonplace ingredient? But isn't ginger similar? No, ginger you don't get so much in Europe, do you?
You get it in Middle Eastern maybe, and a lot of Far East cuisine. But garlic is in Thai, it's in Vietnamese.
Yeah,
Chinese,
all right. I suspect it's because it's got such a lovely flavour and it's so easy to grow. But you then would want to know how it's ended up spreading around the world. We shall find out, why is garlic such a popular international ingredient? How do you learn to float? And I did the laugh question. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. Calls for a steward's inquiry on the laughter question, which I kind of saw coming, but I don't know that I agree that laughter is learned behaviour. Do you? Do you want to know something incredible? I'm just learning about epigenetics or something like that. I may have slightly misused the word. But if you take a mouse, right, stress it out, get the mouse in a really stressed situation, and then make it smell something like, for example, lavender, then get the mouse to breed, 2 generations later, according to the latest research, the mouse that's born will have a negative reaction to lavender. It's like a kind of genetic inheritance that's passed on because genes get turned on and off and they bred while this gene, this anti-lavender gene, associating the stress levels with the lavender. Isn't that interesting? I think that's interesting. So that is just in the context of the laughter question and whether or not it is ingrained. It's something that we don't learn. It's something that is just... by nature. I think it is, but if you know that it isn't, then we'll have a steward's inquiry. Steve is in Purley. Steve, question or answer?
Afternoon, Sir James. I have a question.
Carry on.
Why do bagels have to have holes in them?
Do they?
No, well, they all seem to, all the ones...
No, I know, but if it's not got a hole in it, does it cease to be a bagel? Does it become something else?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. You know more than me about everything.
No, I just...
That's not being sarcastic.
I'm establishing... Well, clearly you're not being sarcastic. I'm establishing the parameters of your inquiry before we seek answers to it, which is... I mean, and the short answer is neither of us know. I'm trying to think whether or not I've ever had a bagel that doesn't have a hole in it, and if it didn't have a hole in it, would it cease to be a bagel? And that is just a different way of asking the same question that Steve asked, which is, why do bagels have to have holes in? With a side order of, do they have to have a hole in to be a proper bagel? I do not know. Bagels, garlic, and floating in a swimming pool. I hope nobody's experiencing all three of these phenomena at the same time. 0345 60 60 973 is the number. Oh, Grace is in Southwark. Question or answer?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, sorry.
That's all right.
Why,
what have you done?
Why can't I throw a successful punch in my dreams?
Holy moly. When did you last have that dream?
Oh, recently.
I've
put it on my in my notes, especially for this. But I always have a crooked hand, or I'm a bit slow.
Same here.
Or I fall over.
Same here. I haven't had that type of dream for years, but as a younger person, I remember having it regularly, and it would be awful. You'd have one of those terrible dream scenarios where you'd be fleeing danger, and you'd arrive somewhere that was supposed to be safe. You'd arrive someone you thought you could trust, and then their mask would slip and you'd realise that you were in danger from them as well, and you'd think, right, I'm going to hit you now, and your hand would turn into jelly.
Yes.
Your arm.
I want to know why.
I do as well. I mean, it can't just be you and me, can it?
No, I don't think that
would be weird.
I know why I'm not punching in real life. I know my body's shutting it down, but I thought my dream could at least do a realistic punch. If it can do, like, a realistic hyena, why can't I realistically punch it?
What do you mean a realistic? You mean a hyena appears in your dream?
And it looks really real. So why can't I do a real punch?
No, I love that question. I really love that question. And therefore, I hope we get a proper answer to it. Why? I mean, it might be part of the anxiety dream, but I still would like to know why. That's specific. Have you had that? Do you recognise? Yeah, everybody? All three of us? So all four people working on this programme have had a similar experience. And it is... It's a moment of particular terror in a dream, isn't it? When you realise that you've lost... Sometimes you can't scream either. You'd file that under the same, would you? Do you know, I've sort of 13 minutes after 12, I'm just reflecting on how long it is since I've had an anxiety dream or any form of sort of proper nightmare. I'm tempting fate now, aren't I? I'll be too scared to go to sleep tonight. Then again, of course, you know what I'm going to say now, don't you? No? Oh. You don't have to go to sleep to have a nightmare in Britain at the minute. You just need to read the news. Paul's in Tottenham. Question or answer, Paul?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Halloumi cheese.
Halloumi.
Halloumi cheese.
Love it. Had some last night.
Yes, fantastic
squeaky,
product.
Squeaky cheese.
Why is it when you put it in a frying pan or you put it on a barbecue, it doesn't melt?
As in, what is in it different from other cheeses?
Because
it's not just halloumi. A lot of Middle Eastern cheese you can cook. I mean, Saganaki in Greece is rarely made with halloumi. It's a different type of cheese, but you fry it.
That's made with feta. Sometimes it's feta.
But what is it about these cheeses that mean they don't melt when you chuck them in a pan?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that question. And it's going to be quite a boring answer, isn't it? It's going to have something to do with the relationships between proteins and carbohydrates and molecules.
Maybe. Actually, I'll give you a bit of information as well. My granny used to make halloumi back in Cyprus. And when I used to ask her at the age of 10, why is it when I throw that on the barbecue, it doesn't melt? She couldn't answer that either.
She didn't know. She didn't know why.
And she used to make it. Her recipe has been passed down through our family. It's now in its fourth generation.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And do you make it now or not?
No, I don't make it, but my...
Don't talk to me like I've asked you a stupid question. You might have done. I'm trying to be friendly, honestly. Bit of cheese-based banter goes a long way.
How are you going to make halloumi in North London?
Well, I don't know how you're going to make halloumi in North London, but if your grandma could make it in rural Cyprus without the benefits of modern technology, I'd have thought you'd be able to rustle up a bit of halloumi in North London, Paul.
She made halloumi cheese would feed a family of nine.
What did the cheese say when it looked in the mirror?
Oh, God.
Halloumi.
It did, yeah. Well.
No, sorry, I've been ordered to go to a break.
This is LBC.
What makes your mum, your mum?
Tea and biscuits. Never coffee and biscuits, always tea.
My mum never has the same nail colour. Last week, neon green.
She thinks music should only be listened to on vinyl.
Mine's obsessed with the smell of bookstores.
She loves fresh flowers, with some water and lemonade. I mean, lemonade.
Every mum is special, so give her something that's as unique as she is, from a place that is too. Why not shop small with American Express for that extra special gift this Mother's Day? Search Shop Small.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 19 after 12. I'm minded, but I won't, to dedicate the rest of the programme to cheese-based jokes. I think, what did the cheese say when it looked in the mirror? Halloumi. Is pretty good, but it's not even in my top two favourite cheese jokes of all time. Declan's on the case. How do you make Welsh cheese? Carefully. Carefully? No? And my final cheese-based joke is a little bit more controversial. It involves my plans to open a delicatessen, specialising in, to open a fromagerie in the Middle East, which I shall call Cheeses of Nazareth. Sally's in Colchester. Sally, question or answer?
Answer, please.
Carry on. That's quick.
I can answer the dreaming question.
The dreaming question?
Yeah, about why you can't punch people in your dreams.
Yeah, go on.
When we dream, we go through different stages of sleep. We start off a light sleep, we go down through stages to deep sleep.
Yeah.
Then when we come up again to light sleep, it's called REM sleep, and that's been shown through various studies that it's during REM sleep that we dream.
Yeah.
And when we dream about oh, sorts of things, all sorts of things connected to the day we've had and plans ahead and that sort of thing, which often involves actions. If we lived out all those actions, we'd get ourselves into right bunch of rubbish. So
no, but people can drive a car in their dreams.
You feel like you are, but...
Yeah, so why can't you feel like you've punched someone?
You might feel like, but when you try to do it, your arms and legs don't move. But I often feel I've got to get from one part of the house to the other.
Yeah.
And I can't do it because you are effectively paralysed.
Yeah, question is more about why can you do some things in your dream that involve physical movement? So no one dreams about being paralysed, do they? We dream.
Yeah, people have sleep paralysis.
Yeah, okay. I've dreamt that I can fly.
But you're feeling like you're flying.
Well, I know that I'm not flying. I think we're at cross purposes here. I'm quite happy to accept it might be me. But when I dream that I can fly, I find it, when I wake up, remarkable that I can't dream that I could punch someone. So how can I fly but not punch someone?
But what you're doing, when you're feeling that you're flying, you're looking around and you're having the emotional experience. But when you try to do something in your dream, a punch or a walk,
so the more physical it is. So that sometimes you wake yourself up, don't you?
People often say they want to run away from something, but they can never run away from the snowball coming down the hill.
They can run.
They can't.
Well, in a nightmare they can't, but in a different dream they can.
Well, during
REM we've all dreamt we can run, haven't we?
But you can get stuck to the spot. People often report
that's the point of the question, is how come we get stuck to the spot when
because
we can run at other times?
The pons, the part of the brain that is partly controlling physical movement and feelings and balance and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot more biology and neuroscience to it than that. But it is effectively paralysing us so that we don't all go out and live out our dreams and punch people.
Yeah, I don't know that I mean, it might be me being stupid, but I think or it could be you. I think the question is, how come I can do X but I can't do Y in a dream?
It's a physical action of it.
Yes, but there are loads of
perception.
Driving a car is a physical action.
Barely, it's automatic, isn't it? You don't think about
you take. No, it's no more automatic. I would say that it was a bigger physical challenge to drive a car than to punch someone, personally. But as I say, it's me that's been a bit dopey. Mark's in Norwich. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's for the bagels and why they've got a hole in the middle.
Ah, go on.
It's so they cook evenly.
Was that the... It's a strangely fraught mystery hour today. Was that the question?
I'm pretty sure that's
was it
the
why
said.
Do they have a hole in the middle?
So they cook evenly.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Qualifications?
I've cooked Jamie Oliver's breakfast bagels before. I think it was in that.
As in, you got the recipe out of his book rather than you went round his house like a stalker and started putting bread products through the letterbox.
Yeah.
He usually listens to Mystery Hour, actually, so he may well be able to deny or confirm your claim. That does it say that in his book?
I'm pretty sure it did, yeah.
Okay. That's why it cooks evenly. And so if it doesn't have a hole in it, it ceases to be a bagel?
It will be doughy. Well, it'll be doughy in the middle.
It would be doughy in the middle. No one likes a doughy middle. Do they?
No.
I think I'm going to give you...
I've also got a very good cheese joke for you as well.
Does it? Okay, go on then.
Okay. Did you hear about the explosion at the French cheese factory?
Brie. No.
Debris everywhere.
Debris. I knew it'd be Brie. I don't know why I knew it'd be Brie. I thought it might be Camembert. Debris everywhere. That's absolutely shocking. What's the best cheese to use if you need to hide a horse?
Mascarpone.
Give him a round of applause. The man's a genius. there you go. 24 minutes after 12 is the time. Matthew's in Letchworth. Matthew, question or answer?
It's an answer to do with the bagel question.
The bagels? Sorry, already? Bagel We've question. Only just answered the bagel. You've got a steward's inquiry before the horse has finished running.
Exactly, because this is a bone of contention. I once asked a family friend who owned a chain of kosher bakeries why,
strong,
when I was a kid...
Strong play.
Why?
Yes.
Yeah. Why bagels, or bagels, as we call them
bagels.
In the East End,
yes.
Have a hole in the middle. And he said that back in the old country, back in Poland or East Germany or wherever it was, They used to be sold in markets individually, and the people that carried them around either on sticks or on strings, and it was the best way of dispensing them. Same with pretzels.
They've got holes in.
Yeah.
Which means you can string them on something for ease of
exactly.
carriage and your little... I mean, you know, it's funny, isn't it, how there's nothing new under the sun? Because bagels...
There never is.
It's basically pop-up food, isn't it? It's,
yeah.
Or street food. And we get, you know, you go to North London. Actually, I don't know why I'm falling into that silly old lazy cliche. You go anywhere funky and they're doing street food these days and we all think it's a massive new discovery. It's just a variation on things that are hundreds of years old, isn't it? And I'm going to...
Exactly.
I like that answer. And I think qualifications... A fellow with a kosher bakery told me is about as good as it's going to get, short of actually
all
speaking
right.
to a kosher baker. And while
okay.
Jamie Oliver probably has a point in terms of the culinary efficacy of the hole in the middle, and while he has done more to reintroduce the word kosher into the public's vocabulary than many people, many Gentiles have, I'm giving you the round of applause on this one.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, you're
thank
very
you.
Welcome. Thank you for that. I'm hungry now with that cheese and bagel. Helen is in Haywards Heath. Helen, question or answer?
It's a question.
Yes.
Now, this is probably going to sound completely stupid.
Don't worry, you'll be in very good company.
Sorry, that was a Steve Allen laugh.
Yes.
Now, why do we have a pair of shorts, a pair of trousers, a pair of pants,
yep.
but we don't have a pair of jumpers? We don't have a pair of cardigans.
It wouldn't be that, would it? It'd be the sleeves, I suppose, would be the parallel.
Well, you have two sleeves and you have two legs.
You do, but no one says a pair of jumpers or a pair. The answer is, oddly, I mean, interesting, but you may not believe me. I hope you do. The answer is that originally you would have had two. This is what a codpiece was for. So you'd have worn two stockings or two leg coverings, and then you'd have had another middle bit that was the third item of clothing. And from that, all else has evolved.
Mm.
Well, think of stockings. So you have a pair of stockings,
yes.
right? And
I'm a girl. I know stockings.
And then
the language
evolved with the evolution of the clothes. So a pair of stockings becomes a pair of tights, despite the fact that you've only got one item in your hands.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I also have a pair of arms.
You do, yeah.
And I wear a jumper, a jumper.
Yeah, but you've never, I mean, upper body wear has never involved separate sleeves with a linking.
Right, okay, I see what you're saying.
Capiche?
Okay.
Yeah? But I think that's it. I mean, it might be to do with the French.
I'm not sure because...
No, I can sense your scepticism. In fact, I believe I predicted it. Would you like a brilliant joke before you go, based upon the conversation that we've just had?
A brilliant what, sorry?
Joke.
Oh, go on.
What's this?
Steve Allen laughing?
No. No, that's not fun. You've ruined it. I'm not telling you. You've ruined it for me. That's it. I'm not playing. Coming up to 29 minutes after 12. We'll leave that on. A pair of... is Steve going tonight to the Global Awards? Does he not... Because he won last year. I hope he's there. I haven't seen him for a while. Always much more fun at company dues when Steve's in the house. If you're not familiar with Steve Allen and you don't understand why the very mention of his name reduces Helen to uncontrollable hysterics, then he is live on LBC in the sort of pre-breakfast show every morning. 29 after 12 is the time. Question still in need of answers. How do we learn to float? Why is garlic so prevalent? Bagels, we've done. Why can't you punch in your dreams? And why does halloumi not melt? That's a science question, actually, not a cheese question. But it looks at first glance like a cheese question. What else have we got? Is that it? What was the last one? Done the garlic and the pair of trousers, but I think we've done that. If I got it wrong, then you will no doubt derive enormous pleasure from pointing it out by dialing me on 03456060973. It's coming out to 12:30. Tim Humphrey has the headline. It's not about being one of those people who knows well every penny has been spent on it. It's more about recognising the importance of value for money and seeing ways in which you can maximise it. So the Platinum Cashback Everyday Credit Card, one of Amex's most straightforward cards, gives money back to customers as they make their purchases. And that's on all purchases that you make. There's no fee. There's a 5% cash back on all purchases in the first 3 months, up to a limit of £100. Representative 22.9% APR variable. Terms and conditions apply. Search Amex Cashback for further information and to apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:34 is the time, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the frolics will continue shortly. Before that, though, back to the grown-ups. Theo Usherwood is here, LBC's political editor, just to run us through what Matt Hancock has said. So, I mean,
I'll keep it short because I know it's Hello Turf.
Well, it depends, you know, how important it is. So, just to recap, a junior minister in the Department of Health contradicted the advice currently being given by the chief medical officer.
Chief medical officer updated today, MPs,
in the space of an hour or two.
No, he didn't contradict them. He got it wrong, and then the chief medical officer told MPs
the correct
details.
Right. And now the Secretary of State for Health has...
He's been speaking at the British Chambers.
So as a mark of the madness, I have to say to you, did the Secretary of State of Health...
He didn't touch on the same topic.
Did he agree with the chief medical officer or the minister in his own department?
He actually agreed with the minister in his own department, insisting that we're at the... containment phase at the moment. Two other points that Matt Hancock, the Secretary of State for Health, made when speaking at the British Chambers of Commerce at the QE2 Centre in central London. Mm-hmm. The first is that when it comes to major steps to prevent mitigate against the effect of coronavirus in terms of closing schools, universities, as the Italians have done, well, the British government at the moment isn't minded to go down that route.
I will always prioritise protection of life, but we will seek to minimise the social and economic disruption too. Because the scientific advice is very clear that going too far or too fast carries risks of its own. Ultimately, we're working to a timetable that is set by the progress of the virus itself. With 85 confirmed positive cases in the UK, shutting down all our schools and universities, for example, would not have a clinical benefit at this stage, but it would impose huge social and economic costs.
Now, there have been questions about whether the government can ensure that there is a vaccine in time for when the peak of the coronavirus outbreak hits the UK, could save lives, potentially save people from elderly people and those at risk with pre-existing medical conditions from being ill. Mr. Hancock said that vaccine wouldn't be ready.
Research has been ongoing ever since the moment that COVID-19 was identified at the end of last year. We have some of the finest scientific minds in the world working day and night on a vaccine. But we do not think that a vaccine will be available in the coming months. And just as important is research to understand what currently available drugs and treatments might help those who are already sick.
Matt Hancock, Secretary of State for Health there. Before you go, Theo, the Michel Barnier and David Frost, the negotiations are
that was first started the talks. Yes. And you remember last month there were briefings from Number 10 sources insisting that Boris Johnson could find a way of getting around the withdrawal agreement so there weren't checks on goods travelling between Northern Ireland and...
Not just briefings from sources. The Prime Minister stated publicly and repeatedly that there would be no checks on goods.
Yes. But there's... during the general election and ahead of the general election. Since the withdrawal agreement was signed, since the general election, Number 10 have been briefing that Boris Johnson is looking for a get around. Just to confirm for you, anyone listening who might be worried that Boris Johnson might be reneging on the withdrawal agreement, Michel Barnier, who's leading negotiations for the Commission, the European Commission, has met with David Frost, who is leading the talks for the leading the negotiations for the UK side. And they've concluded that Boris Johnson will adhere to the withdrawal agreement and there will be checks.
But he got elected promising that there wouldn't be.
Yes, so there were two things that were said at the time.
No, that's all right, just clarifying. I would perhaps look into that on another day. 50,000 agents, customs agents needed. That number's probably just gone up as a result of that exchange. And of course, the National Audit Office revealed today that we have 43,000 fewer nurses than we need. Theo Usherwood, many thanks. No wonder everyone's so delighted that we get a mystery hour once a week to focus on less important matters. Adam is in the Forest of Dean. Adam, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
To the halloumi question.
Halloumi.
So, halloumi. So, halloumi is already cooked. That's why it doesn't melt.
Shut the front door.
No.
Are you serious?
Keep the front door open.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Nah.
So the same as, I don't know whether I pronounce it correct, but the Indian cheese paneer.
Paneer.
So if when, again, in the cooking process, it doesn't melt. And if you think, if you've ever used ricotta as well in cooking, that doesn't melt either, because ricotta's from boiled whey, so it's the byproduct of whey after you've made cheese.
So, what are your qualifications?
I make cheese.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Have you made it? God, I don't know where to go with this now, really. Have you?
But only as a hobby. We've just got goats, and then, you know, we milk the goats, and then we make cheese from it. But
you get your
milk.
Have you made halloumi then?
Yeah, I had some last night, same as you.
And you made it yourself?
Yes.
And you cooked
it back in the summer.
So it's cooked in the cheese making process?
Yes, so you get your milk, you warm it up, you add your rennet, and then it splits the curds and whey that we all know.
Curds
and whey.
Yeah.
And then you get your curds, and then you press them, and then you cut them, and then you bring your whey back up to temperature, just below boiling point. You put your curds back in, and then after about 20 minutes, it floats to the top, and it's cooked. And then you cool it, and then you slice it, and away you go.
Can't really argue with that. I mean, it's news to me, but the in the absence, you've done it. How can I argue? I don't. Why am I so struggling? Why am I so reluctant to believe you?
You wanted science, and I don't know the science, but that's how it works.
So the questioner might have wanted. I suspect he'll be happy with that answer. So the point is, it's already a cooked cheese. So all you do is when you cook it, you just cook the outsides of it.
Yeah, well, you're just warming it through, and then, yes, I suppose when you grill it...
And it can melt, just for the record, for the avoidance of doubt, if you put it on a really low heat for a really long time, it will actually melt.
Yes, I suppose it would. That's happened to me a couple of times. Yeah. But, yeah, just a really hot pan. And
What's the trickiest? Look, I like to do it with a bit of chilli, actually. But what's the trickiest? Okay. Yeah, the chilli oil. What's the trickiest cheese you've made?
Cheddars and anything you have to age is really hard.
Is it?
Because, bacteria likes to get involved and spoil your
in
fun.
In a bad way. Well, you can't get better than that. Round of applause for Adam.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, lovely hobby to have, cheese making. Blessed are the cheese makers. Anna is in St Albans. Anna, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
I'm just wondering, how do police operations get their name?
I think there's a computer.
So, for example, a computer?
Yeah, I think I don't know, and I'm not going to claim that I've gone definitive on this or anything like that, but just sort of a generator. Or actually, why am I talking, Anna? I've got no idea. I do apologise, because I was just thinking, I read a lot of police procedurals, and if I can keep Anna on the line for long enough, I'm sure that it will come to me. I'll get a memory of where... maybe the chief investigating officer just picks a name. So you want to know, this is Operation... Swordfish. Who decided?
Yeah.
Why, are you planning something? You want to have some input?
Not currently. No.
Okay. Well, I shall find out for you. Who gives a police operation its name? And I have plenty of time to answer that question. You may even get in just before the 12:45. 0345 606 0973. I like that question. Operation Swordfish. Richard's in Exeter. Richard, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
Hi, it's for the body. How do you learn to float?
Yes.
Short answer is you don't.
Oh. So but did you understand the question? Did you understand the question?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, go on.
So you already answered the learning part of it.
Yes.
Because it's just like any other environment. You learn to climb, you learn to walk, you learn to run. In the water, it's exactly the same. So there are different things that you can do to propel yourself or keep yourself afloat.
Yeah.
But in terms of how do you learn to float, which your caller was more concerned about,
yes,
it's determined by the weight. Your weight and your composition, whether you're bone or fat or muscle, etc.
Yes.
The size of your lungs in terms of your body composition. So as you float, your body's pressing down on the water and the water presses back, pushing you up. So you're not learning to do anything. It's your body composition that determines how high you float in the water.
So practice is the answer.
In terms of compensating for your natural buoyancy.
Yeah, that's what he meant. That does, because what he was describing was his four-year-old could swim underwater, and I think we've all been here as parents, actually. But there was almost like a loss of nerve when you were expected to do on the surface of the water what you'd successfully managed to do beneath the surface of the water. And that is just, it's actually harder, because when you're swimming underwater, you don't need to worry about buoyancy. Whereas when you're swimming on the water, you've got to, I mean, it would become a subconscious,
maintain that buoyancy,
yeah. which would involve a sort of redistribution, as you say, of various variables.
Exactly, yeah. And between kids and adults, there's going to be variances as well, because even kids, they have a different composition.
Two different humans are going to be different levels of floatiness.
Exactly.
I'm quite floaty, Richard, would you believe? No, I am quite floaty. I can go on my back, and not everyone can do this. I can go on my back in the sea, or and I don't mean the Red Sea, I mean a normal sea, or even in a swimming pool with no salt in it. And I can get it right. If I get my breathing dead right, I can put my hands behind my head, behind the back of my head, and my ankles, I can see my toes poking out of the water, and it looks like I'm on a lie low, and I'm not.
I don't want to take anything from you, because that's a pretty good party trick.
Yeah?
But everybody floats, because when you're unconscious, you float as well.
Yeah, but I'm not unconscious.
The natural buoyancy.
But I'm not unconscious when I do that. At least...
It's why we say you don't learn to float.
No.
If you just relax, you will float to the surface.
That's the point, isn't it? And the younger you are, the less likely you are to relax in the water. And I'm not suggesting that I have a superpower, merely that my daughters haven't yet mastered the art of doing that. So what larks we have on holiday, Richard.
Exactly.
What are your qualifications?
A peace lifeguard.
Round of applause.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. It's 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Andrew Castle.
British airline Flybe is in administration. It's gone bust. It would be instructive to hear from staff members about what was said to them and if Flybe's demise has affected you. Tell me how.
Andrew Castle on LBC.
Got the tickets, Sergey?
Yep.
Now, what movie are we watch?
Ooh, an adventure.
Oh, where are we?
Ooh, it's a tomb.
Okay, stay close to me and whatever you do, don't set off any... Booby traps.
Uh-oh.
Ah! Sergey, run! Enjoy endless adventures with 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Meerkat Movies when you buy through Compare Market.
Qualifying purchases, Tuesdays or Wednesdays, participating cinemas, 2 standard tickets only, cheapest ticket free, T's and C's apply.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:49 is the time, and... quite a few calls for a steward's inquiry on the cheese question, on the halloumi question. It's not up to me, it's up to you. If you ring in with one, I can't take it via text, but some of these, particularly this one here, does look quite definitive. I tell you what, I just looked up how to make halloumi in the break, because I was interested in how easy it was. It's very, very difficult, and not for the first time. I think Mystery Hour has its roots in questions like this. Who did it first? Because when you look at the process involved in making cheese, especially when you introduce rennet and remember where rennet comes from, it's quite incredible to, you know, people often say, who first milked a cow? That's not a mystery to me, because you'd have watched a calf having a drink and you'd have thought, oh, I'll taste that. And if you're starving, so that's not a massive mystery. But to go from a pint of milk, presumably things happen by accident almost, and then people tried to make them happen on purpose. But how the hell anybody ever came up with the idea of making halloumi is beyond me. Rishi's in Fulham. Rishi, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
Right, it's the garlic question. The garlic was originally sent out around the world from wherever they started from as medicinal and as a preservative. So they were sent out in different types of food, and people who then got it in a particular country, they said, oh, this tastes nice, and then decided to grow it and put it in part of their cuisine. And it was just very simple, really.
Yeah, but why did it spread around so much? Why has it arrived in so many other countries?
Because, if you take the dish vindaloo, which is an Indian dish, but it's not an Indian dish.
No.
It is actually Portuguese. The Portuguese sailors who went to India, the wine has turned to vinegar, and they used to put the chicken meat in there with the garlic as a preservative, and that aloo is garlic in Portuguese that formed the dish vindaloo.
Is that right?
And they used to cook
it. I never knew that. So yeah. It's a patriotic Portuguese dish then.
It is, yeah. They used to bring it back on the ships and take it and cook it.
I think the bottom line answer is still because it's so flavoursome and so easy to grow, isn't it? Because the question is, why is it everywhere? So as soon as people started travelling, the stuff they travelled with garlic would have been a really obvious thing to travel with because it is such a useful,
absolutely,
whatever it is.
When they got it into whatever country they exported some of this food to as a preservative, they liked the taste of it and they saw it's so easy to grow. It is lovely. So they decided to grow it, you know, and put it part of their cuisine, really.
And it was really easy to grow.
Very easy to grow.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah, nice one. Round of applause for Rishi.
Thank you.
Oh, hang on, I didn't ask what your qualifications are.
Just a foodie.
Just that'll do. Give him another round of applause.
Thanks.
You're listening to Mystery Hour on LBC with me, James O'Brien, for approximately another six and a half minutes before we hand over to Sheila Fogarty. Andrew Castle, I beg your pardon. Sam's in Chepstow. Sam, question or answer?
Hi, James. I have an answer to the punching the dream question.
Carry on, mate.
So when you're asleep and you're dreaming, your mind does all sorts of wonderful things. Your imagination sort of runs wild. But it's also still connected to your nervous system, so it responds to sensations you're feeling in real life. So if you're really thirsty in real life, say you've been out on a drink or you've had a big Chinese the night before,
yeah,
you're thirsty in your dream and you try and quench that thirst and you can't in your dream because you're obviously not actually drinking.
But you can.
And
you can.
Then when you're like,
I've had a drink. I've had a drink. The last time I smoked was in a dream.
Yeah, did you quench that nicotine?
No, but I did physically do. I'm being a bit dopey on this one.
Of course you did. Of course you did. You physically did it.
Yeah.
But you didn't satisfy that sensation. And the reason you can drive in your dream and it feels like you're actually driving is the sensations of driving. What are they? It's like pressure on your bum and back and maybe a bit on your hands.
Movement.
It's not like that hard to replicate when you're sleeping. It's not that unusual. But if you're running in your dream,
yeah,
then the sensation of running, it's your feet impacting the floor. It's feeling that resistance when you are running in real life.
Yeah.
And it's feeling your legs jolt. If you're running in a dream, you're not getting that resistance against your feet. These are quite big sensations.
Yeah. But you can still... I'm for the record, and with apologies to the last caller who tried to answer this question, I think it's me that's being a bit dumb on this. But I do run in my dreams.
Okay, well, I don't. No matter whether it's an anxiety
I also
or whatever,
fly.
It feels like I'm running underwater.
I fly in my dreams. Not every dream.
Okay, well, that's because... Well, when you fly in real life, what are the physical sensations? You don't actually fly, right?
I have to flap my arms really hard.
You don't have to replicate them in your dream. Whereas if you punch in real life, not that you would, of course, it's a big sensation.
It's the profundity or the powerfulness of the physical sensation. The bigger it is, the harder it is to replicate in a dream.
Yeah, if you were to punch in real life and not feel anything on your fist, it would feel weird. It would feel like you're not really punching.
Yeah.
It's the same in your dream.
I think that might have been what the other lady was saying, actually.
Possibly, yeah.
But I'm going to give you a round of applause. And would you mind sharing it with the other lady? You don't have
to. Of course.
That's right. I thought
you
would. You seem like such a top fella. Thank you, Sam. Round of applause. 12:55, Andrew's in Hammersmith. Andrew, question or answer?
Answer for the how we come up with police operation names.
Carry on, Andrew.
Very simply, there are two different ways. If it's a small local operation, then the local police officers will come up with the answer with the name of the operation.
Do you ever get told, no, you can't call it Operation Elephant, you prune?
I once got told that I couldn't call a series of thefts from McDonald's Operation Hamburglar.
It's political correctness gone mad. Give a round of applause for that before we go any further. Operation
Hamburglar. I haven't given you the other
one. No, I know you haven't, but take the round of applause while you can. You're a beleaguered enough force as it is in the Met. So
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Carry on.
So basically the first one is locally, you can come up with stuff like that.
Yeah.
But nationally, so like stuff for Operation Bumblebee to prevent causing any kind of offence, they're just completely random names that are picked out of a book.
What book?
There's like a book centrally. There's like a list of operational names. And they just go
have all been centrally approved, and then you just go through it and pick one that you like.
No, you don't pick one you like, you just pick the next one along.
So it's like hurricanes.
Yeah.
Cool.
It doesn't cause any offence to anybody. It's not necessarily connected or.
If it's local, you pick it yourselves, although with a few caveats on suitability. If it's national, it comes out of a central register.
Yes, exactly.
Nice one. What are you proudest of?
In relation to...
Just the operations you've been involved in naming.
Operation Winchester.
That's nice.
Yes.
Are you allowed to tell? Of course you're allowed to tell me. What was the... I like that. Was that a reference to Minder, or was it something else?
It was a spate of burglaries that had happened on a canal side.
I like that. Operation Winchester. And you're very near me as well in Hammersmith, so I hope that...
I actually police your ground.
Do you really?
I do, yes.
Well, I mean this. If you need a cup of tea or anything, if you ever need any help taking down any thieves, you know where I am, Andrew. Why are you laughing?
I'd be more than happy to come round and have a cup of coffee with you.
Yeah, but also if you ever need any help taking down thieves...
Oh, do you know what? I think you'd be brilliant as an interviewer.
No, I just said if you ever need any help taking down thieves, man, I'm not doing the interviews. I'm doing the physical work.
Okay.
All right.
I'll keep you in mind.
Rugby tackles, that kind of thing. Speciality. Qualification.
You go for it. You can be my muscle man.
I'd be Robin to your Batman. What are your qualifications?
I'm a police detective.
No kidding, Sherlock. Round of applause. Operation Hamburglar. You should be running the Met, mate. You should be the commissioner. Thank you, Andrew, and thank you for indulging my oddly childish sense of humour. I think we've more or less done it, have we? Punching in dreams, halloumi, garlic, floating. Can you think of any we haven't done? I might have a crack myself. I think we've done an absolutely full board. That is fantastic. And there is some dispute and argument over the... what you can and can't do in dreams. Some of it has got a little bit adult. But I think in the context of, if you think about a rock and a hard place, if you think about actual pressure, physical pressure, none of your adult stuff involves... Anyway, I'm not going to go into too much detail. I'm just going to say it works for me. The reason why you can't punch someone is because your brain is sending a message that your arm is incapable of obeying in the context of a dream. Flying, obviously, is a different kettle of fish altogether. That's it from me for another day. We'll do it again tomorrow from 10. Here is Andrew Castle.
James, thank you very much indeed. And a very good afternoon, everybody. As England's chief medical officer says that the UK is mainly in the delay phase of the government's four-stage approach to coronavirus, the Prime Minister's spokesman says that if a decision is made to move to the delay phase, an official statement will be made. Either way, the facts are that more people are being confirmed as positive, more people are concerned about their livelihoods. And how do we talk to children about all of this? You know, their little information sponges. What are you telling your children? And 10 hours ago, British airline Flybe announced it was bust, going into administration. It would be instructive to hear from staff members about what was said to them. Now, if Flybe's demise has affected you, either as an employee or a customer or a pilot, tell me how.